570,
an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peterson.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peterson.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
And we continue on, Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. All right, this hour, we're going to get into the Dodgers a bit. We talked Lakers last hour. Andy McCullough from The Athletic will join us. Where are they? You know, Corey Seager, what's the reality here? That he really stays with the Dodgers? How much are the Yankees willing to spend? So we'll get into that. Talk about some pitching as well. Also later this hour, because Staples Center is now going to be called Crypto.com Arena.
Well, maybe they should just call it Crypto Arena instead of Crypto.com Arena.
That's what got me.
Yeah.
The .com.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe they'll change it. Maybe they'll shorten it.
We'll refer to it as the Crypt, which actually is kind of a cool name.
Very cool.
Yeah. You know, and if the Lakers keep losing, they'll be writing letters, ooh, Tales from the Crypt.
Ooh.
Anyway. We will open the phone lines, and you know what? We're leaving a little bit of time for this today because we think people are going to want to talk about it. Memories you have of the building that will soon be formerly known as Staples Center. Lakers winning a title, Kings winning a Stanley Cup, concert you may have been to, any event you saw there. You'll be able to call in and reminisce. Specifics, Kobe Bryant, 60 points. Specifics that you remember as we pay tribute to the building formerly soon to be known as Staples Center. But this is Rivalry Week, USC and UCLA. It has become a tradition on the show because it is one of the great stories in LA sports history. Rodney was...
that's a build-up, Brent. My God.
Well, no, I don't think I'm overselling it, Rodney. You know, back then when people actually rode horses to school... And wrote on stone tablets.
Easy.
This actually, for an entire week, captivated the entire city. It was something everybody was talking about. And it all centered around the UCLA-USC game. And it centered around you. So why don't you start by talking about what kind of season you were having to that point and how we got to where we ended up.
Well, it all started,
yes,
on a wagon trail headed west.
That's right.
Now, Fred, you know it's hard when you talk about this week where to begin because it's you know, and it's a shame that it's not it doesn't have kind of the passion or the allure. It's not necessarily passion, but doesn't have the magnitude of it would as if both teams were undefeated or, you know, vying for a Rose Bowl berth or anything like that. So it takes away from it a little bit, but not for the people that went to either one of the schools. So it's still very important. I mean, this is the week that I get bombarded by text and on social media and people bringing up the past on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and remember this and remember that. Everybody worry about their time there, so it is still entrenched in everybody's mind. It brings a lot of people together, and I think I mentioned this early in the week about how, you know, families are split and husband and wives and brothers and sisters are split about, you know, going to different schools. So it's really unique in that there are two major universities in the same city within, you know, a few miles of each other that are in the same conference and are rivals. So it's a very cool thing. And I do remember growing up in Arizona looking to this game as very, 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 very exciting. Obviously, my dad was a coach at Arizona, so Arizona State was big where I came from. But I always had my sights on USC, UCLA. And then when I got here, it was really entrenched in you that you got to beat UCLA. Those are the two big games. UCLA, Notre Dame were one's game. Big games for the university and UCLA so much because you had to see the people year round, you know, within right. LA. So you were going to come in contact with a lot of people and you could have bragging rights. And so it was fascinating. And I will say for me, my 4 years of starting, you know, quarterback at USC, three of those 4 years, that game decided who was going to go to the Rose Bowl.
Right.
So it would and that's the way I always envisioned it. My freshman year, we were big underdogs. UCLA was rolling, and we knocked them out of the Rose Bowl by beating them my freshman year. And then they got back in because Arizona beat Arizona State, so they came back in and actually went to the Rose Bowl later that night. They got in. And then my last 2 years, my junior and senior year, it was the winner of that game went to the Rose Bowl, which was pretty cool. But you know, the 88 game was so significant and so, I think, entrenched in a lot of people's mind, because if you remember this, Fred, you were here, because it was a great year. It was a great year. The Lakers won the title, beat Detroit, and then the Dodgers followed suit and won the World Series in that year. And both USC and UCLA in football were rolling that year. UCLA was at one point for most of the season was ranked number one in the country. We were in the top five throughout the whole year of the country. And when we played, I think we were ranked number two and they were ranked number five. And so it was a big deal. With the Rose Bowl on the line, and then throw on top of that, from individual standpoint, Troy Aikman and myself, we were up for the Heisman Trophy in that year. So it was a lot at stake, and it was a big time build up, and the headlines were everywhere leading up to that game. And the game before, we played Arizona State in Tempe. We were 9-0 at the time, and they were 8-1, and so we went to Tempe and played and killed them, beat them 50-0, came back home and hanging out on Sunday. And then Monday I started to feel just uncomfortable, had flu-like symptoms, didn't think much of it. And then Monday night rolled around and it got worse, and called our trainers and they came over to my apartment and they took my temperature and it was really high. And then they said, this is unusual. We got to take you in. Because I think I was running like 105, 106 temperature at the time, and I was just having all kinds of aches and pains. And
Had you told the coaches, hey, I don't feel well?
No, because we came back, we met and watched the film on Sunday, and then we kind of had a light day Monday. And then that Monday, they knew, because I told them I wasn't feeling well, so I was going to stay home from a little light workout on Monday, and I did. And then Monday afternoon, it got worse, and Monday night, it was terrible. So I checked in the hospital on Monday night and went to Huntington Memorial was our hospital in Pasadena. It was the USC hospital where they did everything. And so I checked in the hospital and thought I was just going to check in there and check out. And they told me that night that I had the measles. And it's like, how do I have the measles? I had the measles before. At least I thought I did. I didn't know I had a chicken pox and all that stuff. They said, yeah, you have measles. I say, oh, measles, what in the world? But I didn't know how bad it could be when you get the measles as an adult, as opposed to as a kid. It becomes more significant and more dangerous. So they kept me in the hospital overnight, and it just kept getting worse. And Tuesdays for us in college was a big media day. And so everybody in that, you know, around the country and especially locally were talking about the game and wanted interviews. And they finally had to divulge that I was suffering from measles and I was in the hospital. And then that's when all the scrambling and everything went crazy. I had people showing up to the hospital in Pasadena trying to get an interview and talk to me about it, you know, posing as doctors and nurses and coming in the room. And finally I got moved. I moved to Long Beach, to a hospital in Long Beach under assumed name. My name was Willie Jackson, Fred, which was my dad's first name and my mom's maiden name. So I put it as Willie Jackson. It didn't take long for people to figure that out. But yeah, I moved to Long Beach and was in hospital all week long, missing practice. And of course, it became, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? And it spun and became a national story, because, again, we were both ranked very high and it had implication of national title and Rose Bowl and all those things. And I just remember getting the phone ringing off the hook of people, and finally had to take the phone out of the room because everybody was calling. They found me and wanted a quote, wanted information. And literally, if the game was Thursday, I could not play. There was no way I was going to be able to play because I was weak. I couldn't feel anything in my sense of taste. It's kind of what people describe as COVID now. Mm-hmm. With the people that have it bad, mm-hmm. that's what I was feeling. I had no okay. sense of taste. I had all kinds of aches and pains. I had everything was going on that there was no way I could get out of bed. And it just kept snowballing. So I remember my teammates, a couple of them would call, and my good friend, we talked about Chris Hale. And I think we talked about it why it was so special, because so many guys from high school played with guys that played at UCLA. So they knew each other.
Right.
So Chris would get calls from guys from UCLA that he knew. Is this a joke? He's faking this. He's faking this. This is not real. You guys are trying to do a ploy and all this. You know, come on, man. Let us know. He's playing. And our guys, Chris and others, were saying, no, he's not been at practice. He's not playing. You know, they didn't try to build it up or anything. He's like, it's real. He's not even here practicing. So he may not play. And it just kept going on and on. And then Friday, I started to feel a little bit better and was able to kind of get to practice to try to throw the ball around a little bit, see if I had, the ability to play. And by that time, once I got to practice and saw the guys and it was kind of a exciting and inspirational thing, I was going to play. Regardless of how I felt, I was going to definitely play when I got to the practice field on Friday. So we wake up Saturday morning, drive into the Rose Bowl to play, and get into the Rose Bowl, and there's all kinds of people out there tailgating and having a good time. And as we get closer and start pulling into where the buses will drop us off in the locker room, I see all these Bruin fans lined up, ready for the bus,
yeah,
for our bus to come in, and they've got doctor's masks, they got dots on their faces. They're doing all, they got signs and all kinds of stuff going on. And I just thought it was hilarious. It was hilarious that that all these students that would go to this length to make a big deal out of this measles thing. But thank God I was able to play, and we went out and again, one of the best, not game statistically, but just the best feeling of being a part of a team that rallied around my situation. And we ended up beating them pretty good on that day, and ended up going to the Rose Bowl and getting that berth. But it was one of those moments where I'm sitting there watching the news, Fred, and it's the lead of news stories. It's
right.
The lead. It's on not the front page of sports. It was on the front page of the newspaper, the LA Times. Will he not play? And it was going crazy. My mom was going crazy. We're hearing about it. It's the front thing. It's a front story on the sports in Arizona. And then I got cousins and friends and people all over. My dad was coaching in Green Bay at the time, and he's getting his players are calling him and texting him, and it's a news story back there. It was incredible how big it was at that moment of whether or not I was going to play in that game. But I legitimately, for all those UCLA fans that still give me grief today, and there are a lot of them that still believe I was faking it, Fred, I legitimately had the measles, and I was in the hospital for 4 days. And at the end of the day, Fred, we don't need no stinking tricks to beat UCLA. We beat them on the field, Fred.
That year.
Yeah. But there's not a year goes by with this game that at least 100 people will text, put it up on social media, remember the measles game, the measles game, the measles game. And I think if you ask people of a certain age, and you just say measles game, and they're affiliated with USC, UCLA, they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
That really is one of the great stories. I look forward to it every year. And you didn't embellish much this year.
I didn't embellish. I didn't even get into the quarantine that happened on campus and certain dorms on campus that were quarantined down, because that's what they thought that I contracted it.
Oh, jeez. All right. Coming up later.
Why, oh, jeez?
Well, you were the man, Rodney. You shut down the whole city for a week. Later, your memories of Staples Center. Up next, let's get into the Dodgers.
Oh, I love the way you dance. That's right. Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan. on a hump day. Beautiful Wednesday. And I know we're going to get some calls, Fred, from people that are, you know, a little upset, a little hurt. And Staples Center will be no longer after Christmas.
Be the crypt.
Crypto.com.
Yep.
And if you're hurt, remember, if you're hurt by this, you might want to consider calling Jacob Imrani.
Accident.
He's our guy, Fred.
Call Jacob Imrani. Call Jacob.
He's the best in the business.
Yeah.
I know this might consider, you know, be in the category of a slip and fall or anything like that, or an accident that you get into in an Uber or Lyft, which he's the expert on.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, some people may feel hurt.
And if you feel hurt, here's something else you could try. Get a life.
Cold-blooded.
You could always take that approach. But anyway, the memories you have of what happened inside the building, that's coming up. Now let's bring on our friend Andy McCullough from The Athletic. Talk some Dodgers. Andy, thanks for being here.
I am thrilled to be here, fellas.
You know, to me, this is the most wonderful time of the year because now the speculation begins, the talk begins, trying to construct rosters begins. We'll start with the Dodgers and the big name, Corey Seager. Does he end up here or does he end up in New York?
You know there's going to be a lockout, right?
Well, that, after that. We know that's all going to get done.
Yeah.
Is that 99%? Is that 99% is going to be a lockout?
It's hard to say. I mean, I haven't really talked to many folks in the game who feel confident about avoiding a lockout. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't guarantee it. But that seems to be the way things are leaning. It's a reasonable tool for, owners to get the union to the table and try and bang out a CBA. So we'll see.
All right.
But to your question, like Seager, if I had to flip a coin – between those two teams, I would say the Yankees because they are more obviously need a shortstop. We'll see how his market develops. We will see how aggressive Scott Boras wants to be in terms of playing, you know, Seager and Marcus Semien, another great infielder who's one of his clients, off one another with some of the teams who really badly want shortstops. Seager makes a lot of sense for the Yankees, but he also made a lot of sense for the Dodgers. It's just the Yankees have a definite need there, whereas the Dodgers' need is broader, you know, which is their pitching staff.
Do you think, given that Scott Boras obviously is his agent, does Corey Seager get in Scott Boras' ear and say maybe we shave off a little bit to stay a Dodger?
No, man, come on. Like,
that's wishful thinking.
And that's not a Seager Boras thing. That's just like, we live in a capitalist society and we all need money for goods and services. And these guys are going to get as much as they can, and that's their right.
All right. Well, you talk about Dodgers need pitching. Max Scherzer, they're talking about $100 million over 3 years. He's 37 years old. Do you think the Dodgers pony up?
I think they're certainly going to be in the mix, and I think that I would pick them as the favorite to land him. But we shall see, because there's a lot of other teams, obviously, who would be interested. I think at that price point, though, and given the Dodgers, under Andrew Friedman, their reticence for doing long-term deals, it's a really good fit. I think, something that looks similar to the Trevor Bauer contract, maybe not as convoluted, but I would suspect the Dodgers will be in that market.
Hey, do you think that since we're talking about Max Scherzer and you mentioned Trevor Bauer, is there any way the Dodgers can alleviate themselves from that contract next year?
No, I think you just have to wait to see how it plays out in terms of discipline. I think next year, there's a thought that there would be some discipline coming, and so the money, that the Dodgers may owe him next year will not be paid, but we'll see, what Major League Baseball judgment is on that one.
Andy McCullough from The Athletic with us. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570, LA Sports. Okay, pitching. So we know that you believe they'll be in the mix for Max Scherzer. There are guys that are available on the market right now. Oakland wanted to move some guys. Cincinnati wanted to move some guys. Who do you think would be available? Who do you think would be a good fit? Who do you think the Dodgers might pursue?
I think there's a fella, he's kind of rehabbing an elbow issue. He lives in Texas, though. It's Clayton Kershaw. He would certainly make some sense for that. In terms of like a trade, Chris Bassitt and Sean Manaea should be available from Oakland. There's always, no one ever really knows what the Reds are doing. That it seems like they are in a sell-off mode, but, they would still want a huge package for someone like Luis Castillo, probably a smaller package for Sonny Gray, so maybe Gray might make more sense there, because Dodgers just don't have the prospect capital that they once did. You know, they traded a lot of guys and graduated a lot of guys from majors. But in terms of, like, free agents, I think they're going to be looking for trying to find value in guys like Andrew Heaney. You know, obviously, they paid Heaney more than I think a lot of people would have expected given how he pitched last year. But, you know, they saw value there. They see him as a bounce-back, you know, sort of candidate. So I expect they'll be looking to do sort of short-term deals with a lot of guys, because they just got a lot of innings to cover next year.
You mentioned Kershaw, and everybody here wants to see Kershaw remain and retire a Dodger. How far do the Dodgers push the envelope on him? Obviously, they can't pay him what they paid him over the last couple of years, but how far should they push the envelope to keep him in a Dodger uniform?
Well, I don't really think it's, you know, I don't even think it's a money thing. I think it's just whether or not he wants to pitch in Los Angeles and whether he feels healthy enough to do it in 2022. I think, you know, he's waiting to start his throwing program, coming off this elbow issue, and he's going to see, you know, how he feels, and they're going to, I mean, if he wants to play for the Dodgers, there will be a large chunk of money waiting for him. But, you know, there is some thought that he might just want to go home. He might want to play in Texas, you know, be with his family every day, you know, and that is real. We'll see. I mean, I would bet on him playing for the Dodgers next year, but, you know, it's going to take some time, because I think he's just not sure if he's ready to pitch next year, it sounds like.
All right, let me give you two more Dodger questions. Chris Taylor, Kenley Jansen. How do you see that playing out?
I see them signing elsewhere, both getting paid well. I you know, the Dodgers would probably make sense to take a look at Jansen, given just how well he pitched. But I think that he's probably going to get a multi-year deal, you know, maybe similar, maybe not as heavy as what Liam Hendricks got, but I think he's going to get a real offer. And I think the market for Taylor is going to be pretty robust. So I just don't see the Dodgers winning the bidding there.
And you don't think they should, with Chris Taylor being given what he can do for the Dodgers as that Swiss Army knife? You just think he's too pricey for them to retain him?
I think it just stops making sense at a certain point, because, you know, Taylor is, his value is in versatility, and, you know, the way to fill that spot is to draft and develop guys who can fill that spot rather than pay for it as it goes into its 30s. I think because Taylor is not an elite defender at any of his positions, he's a perfectly fine defender at a lot of them, and he's a good enough hitter, but he's not an elite hitter, he's not an elite defender, and so there'd be some concern that if, you know, the bat slows up, it's all of a sudden you're paying a good chunk of money to a guy who plays a lot of positions, but none of them, like, at an elite level. I think the way to, you know, fill that spot is to develop it, but, like, you know, Zach McKinstry wasn't that guy, you know, so they're kind of in the market trying to figure out who that person will be. I think that sort of player would more likely come over in a trade. Someone we've, like, never heard of, much like, you know, Kike Hernandez, right, the first time they got him, or Chris Taylor the first time they got him. That's what they probably should be doing with that spot.
Let's shift around baseball now, Andy. And Noah Syndergaard signs a $21 million deal with the Angels. It's 1 year. Some executives thought they were out of their mind for signing him for that kind of money. What do you think?
I think it's a lot of money for a guy who's thrown two innings in the last 2 years. I think it's a real gamble. I think if he's healthy, he should be pretty good. But that's a pretty significant if. You know, Syndergaard is a guy who's had, you know, great results at times in the majors and has been really effective at times in the majors. But, you know, the health is just a real concern. That's coming off Tommy John, and that's, you know, not a cakewalk for anyone. There's sort of this perception that after you have TJ, you know, you'll be just fine. But, you know, it's a real thing. So, you know, that's a lot of money for it's a lot of money for 1 year when you're just not sure what you're getting.
You mentioned, we talked about Seager. You mentioned Semien, the other guy, shortstop Carlos Correa. Now, he made some noise talking about Derek Jeter, and the captain didn't deserve any gold gloves. But where do you see him ending up?
I just suspect Detroit. You know, the connection with A.J. Hinch, the Tigers need, you know, sort of a face of the franchise type. You know, it makes a lot of sense. But Texas is real. I mean, there's you know, Seattle even makes some sense. There's a few places he could end up, but my bet would be Detroit.
Andy McCullough with us, Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570, LA Sports. Okay, now let's talk about this lockout, Andy. Let's get into that. And what do you think is going to happen? How long do you think it's going to last?
I think it'll last for a month or two. This is just me totally spitballing, you know, based off this, like, conversations with folks and, you know, reading what, you know, Evan Zelick and Ken Rosenthal are writing at The Athletic. But I think it'll, you know, last into, you know, being probably February or so, and then there'll be a frenzy, and you know, a lot of guys will sign then.
Well, Andy, we appreciate you jumping on. Thanks for the information today. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Rogan and Rodney.
AM 570 LA Sports.
Once again, thanks to Andy for jumping on. Okay, let's get to it. 866-987-2570. We want your memories. We want your moments. The things you will carry with you from inside Staples Center. December 25th, that becomes Crypto.com Arena. So what did you see when it was Staples Center? What are the memories you will carry with you? Your calls are next.
A bird with a word came to me. The sweetest
of
a honeycomb tree. And now
Rodney P. Fred Rogan on a beautiful hump day Wednesday. November 17th. Flying through 2021, Fred. It's rolling along.
Really is. Things change. New year brings a new name to Staples Center. Crypto.com Arena. Dan Beckerman was on earlier. We talked about it. He is the president of AEG. But now your chance to weigh in. What are the memories you had of that building when it was known as Staples Center? 866-987-2570. Could be the Lakers, the Kings, WrestleMania, whatever it is. Give you a chance to reminisce. Life is a creation of moments. Moments bring us memories. And what memories do you have? Let's go Adam in Boyle Heights. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Fred. Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking the call, man. I appreciate you guys.
Yep.
So for me, it's three moments, and I'm sorry that I'm going to break it down into three, but it's all going to relate to the Mamba, man. It was the game winner against the Suns in the playoffs.
Okay.
It was a 81-point game against the Raptors, yeah. And obviously the farewell. The Staples Center, like you said, it's just a name, but the building will remain, and there's great memories there. And we definitely will win more championships, but, I mean, that's the house that Kobe and Shaq built, and then obviously Kobe took it to another level. So for me, that's always going to be my memories is, just Mamba, man. That's it.
Appreciate it.
Too many great memories. Many great memories. And thank you guys. And I hope you guys continue to put out good content out there.
Appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Yeah, it'd be hard to argue when you look at the memories. Kobe's got to be in a lot of them, Rodney.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. That was actually the number one that stood out in my mind is I was at Kobe's last game there. And when he hit the 60 points and just kind of feeling it build as he got closer and closer and then just, you know, kept shooting and kept making them. And it was for him to go out like that was just still gives me chills to talk about it. But for me, that was the moment, the 60 of all the things. And yeah, obviously they won a lot of championships there and stuff like that. I remember was there at the Robert Horry shots. It was a lot of them, but Kobe going out with 60 was pretty for me at the top of the list.
Yeah. And you know what? I was there for that. I was there for 81. I was there for all the championships as well. But I got to tell you, 81 was a great night. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But that 60 at the end.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know.
Saying goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. Okay. Brian in L.A., go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? I had a, since you mentioned Kobe, I got to say, like, the end of the 09 season, the first championship year of the back-to-back. I remember my first and only Laker game since I moved to Southern California back in 99 was the dead last game of that season. I think they were playing Sacramento, but I had a homie who had, he had like a private suite for his wine magazine, and we got to see them win. It was like, for them, they had to win that game in order to get, you know, the home court advantage throughout the playoffs, as we all know who's that gone to. But I've seen Rush concerts there that were amazing. But WrestleMania 21 had to have been probably the best single time I had because I don't know if you guys know the actor Peter Green. He played the bad guy in the movie The Mask, you know, with
Jim Carrey.
He's a character actor, mostly in, you know, the 90s movies, you know, like Zed in Pulp Fiction and stuff. He's like one of my best friends, and we actually had all access passes. And that's what made that particular day so much more fun than it could ever have been. Just
Brian, thanks for the call. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, there were WrestleMania was there.
WrestleMania, there were concerts there.
Yeah.
I saw Beyonce there. It was great. Not to mention other concerts, but yeah, a lot of great memories.
Let's go, Jeff in Santa Clarita. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Good. So I got three moments, and I've been to about 50 or 60 games since Staples opened, and I'm just gonna go with my top three that I was at. And I've been for a lot of good ones. The first one was Game 6 of the 2010 NBA Finals against the Celtics, where they just beat them down and forced a Game 7. That was a great game to be at. Number two, which I don't think this game gets enough credit in among people. I think this will never be done again. And even more important than the 81-point game, when he outscored Dallas 62-61 after three quarters. I don't think one player will ever outscore another team after three quarters again. That was a great game. But my favorite game that I was at was the Robert Horry game against Sacramento, and I've never heard the place that loud. It was awesome, and I'll never forget it.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I was there, too. Big shot Bob, boy. Those shots, ooh.
He knocked him down.
Yeah, he did.
All right, let's go. Glenn on the 15 freeway. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
So my good memory about it is a lot that people don't know about, but I actually played football in the Staples Center.
Well, that's true. I got to be honest with you, Glenn. I got to be honest with you. Not a lot of people know that you played football in the Staples Center. That's an accurate statement.
No, I 100% I agree. But I played for the Long Beach Lions, which is a semi-pro team, and we played against the Inglewood Blackhawks. In Staples Center, it was a game before the Avengers, and my best memory about it was catching a 3-yard out pass and having two defenders pin me against the wall and giving me a big old helmet bruise on my hip. That's my memory of it.
Well, Glenn, thanks for the call, and I'll tell you, of everybody that's listening right now, you might have the most unique memory.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Yeah, I mean, the Arena Football League played there. I remember. Yep. NBC had those games.
Did you do them? Did you do any of those games, Fred?
Yeah, I always got that assignment.
You did?
And those Avenger games were fun, Fred. I know you probably hated it, but as a kid back in the day, I loved going to Avenger games.
Yeah,
they were cheap, and they were fun. It was fast-paced.
Yeah, and let's stand for the Avengers.
Stand with the Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Fred, this radio station used to be the home of the Avengers.
Right.
We used to air all of their games.
I ran
on
the board for
a lot
of them. That's right.
Indeed.
This radio station used to be the home for everything.
That's not it. Yeah, not an inaccurate statement, Fred.
Right.
That's right.
If it happened in Los Angeles, this radio station was the home of it. All right, let's go. Brian, Grand Rapids. Are you listening in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
I am in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Well, thanks for listening on the app. Go ahead.
Born and raised in L.A., but I've been here for a few years. Many, many, many memories from Staples Center. Watching them beat the Kings in the playoffs. Watching the Can You Dig It?
Yep, absolutely.
All the wonderful memories, and even a horrible memory. Although it's kind of a bittersweet memory. I got to meet Bob Miller. But it's because I went to the Lost and Found because I lost my 87-88 back-to-back championship hat at the Forum.
And Bob Miller was working at the Lost and Found?
No, but as I was walking out of the Lost and Found, Bob Miller was walking up, and me and my roommate at the time, he had no clue who Bob Miller was. And I'm just like, oh, my God, Bob Miller. I'm like, what the heck? It was the day that the Kings and the Lakers played on the same day in the playoffs.
Wow.
And so they were switching over the court. It was going from basketball to hockey. It was like they set a record for like fastest changeover in sports history or something like that. And Bob Miller was there, and I shook his hand, and I'm walking away. And I'm like, I can't believe I just met Bob Miller. My roommate's like, who the heck was that? I'm like, what? That's Bob freaking Miller. And he's like, that's him? Yeah, we just had to have this short little 5-minute conversation. It was pretty cool.
Well, Brian, we appreciate you listening on the app, and I got to tell you something. Thanks so much. Seriously. Bob Miller, one of the best guys you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah. great guy.
What a terrific guy. God, we've both known Bob forever, and he really is a special guy. All right. Thanks, everybody, for sharing your memories. Sports. Tell you, there might be some tears shed, Rodney, today.
Yeah, I think so, Fred.
Somebody might be a little weepy today.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully this individual will provide spirituality as well. That's next.
Johnny Juzang one more time. Bruins basketball continues as North Florida comes to California to do battle with the Bruins. Pregame follows Petros and Money at 7 with tip-off at 7:30 on your official home of UCLA Bruins basketball.
AM 570 LA Sports.
AM 570 LA Sports.